Okay, so Parshas Noach. And this parsha just doesn't get any better. Every year you look at it and you're just like, oh my gosh, there's so much, too much to say. There's way too much to say. I'm not even going to talk about Migdal Bavel. Migdal Bavel I'm not even going to go into until next week. I'm probably going to add it on to Avraham Avinu. Migdal Bavel is absolutely the most craziest thing in the world. Everything that I find is just like one thing after the other. You can just add on to it. After. Dor Enosh happened beforehand. And I have my own theories on Dor Enosh. It's too bad. Pangea and everything like that. But we're not going to talk about that either. Dor Enosh is for another time. Chanoch, good old Chanoch, which I think I've brought up every single year since it must be 7 years already. I'm not going to talk about Chanoch either, and the reason why is because Chanoch is just, it's too far off. It's like Bereishis stuff. When we do Bereishis, we'll do Chanoch again. Mitzvah Shalach also. We'll talk a little bit about Mitzvah Shalach, but Eli told us Noach.
Was there a Bereishis show this year?
No. Sorry, Eli told us Noach. Noach ish tzadik. Tell me why you've dorosav. Told us of Noach. He was a man. He was a tzaddik. He was perfect in his generations. As Elokim is Alech Noach, God. He walked with God. With God walked Noah. So Bidorosav. Rashi has a whole thing over here. Bidorosav. Everybody knows this one. Yesh Merabazim Bidorshem Osel Lishvach. Yesh Bidorshem Osel Lignai. Some say it's a good thing. Some say it's a bad thing. Was Noah a great guy? Now look at the lashon of Rashi. Kol Shekhen Shilo Yibidor Tzaddikim Ayid Tzaddik Yoser. If he was in a door of tzaddikim, he would have been an even greater tzaddik. The Gnai is Lvi Doro Yitzaddik. Vilo Yibidor Shel Avram. If he would have been in the door of Avraham Avinu, he would have been considered nothing. Now that's a harsh lashon, especially since the Gemara does not use that lashon. The lashon of the Gemara is lishvach is the same. Leganai is not that he would loy nechshav leklum. He wouldn't have been as great. He wouldn't have been considered a tzaddik. He would have been just like anybody else in the generation. But Rashi's saying loy nechshav klum. He would have been a nobody. He would have been like a garbage guy off the street who nobody really recognized, and everybody said he's just like another guy. He's another guy out there. So what's the difference between them?
How do they know?
How do they know what?
Picked by a chef.
That he was
a tzaddik or whatever it was?
No, how can you say that he would have been anything if he was with Avraham?
How does the Midrash know anything?
Oh, what he would have been like with Avraham Avinu? In other words, how could he be like with Avraham? So listen, that's part of the question also. How can you say what he would have been? In other words, if the Pasuk calls him a tzaddik, where do you go off saying, no, he wasn't? Like, who are you? What do you mean? No offense, it's Rashi. But like, Avraham is known as tzaddik, I don't believe so. But it does say that he walked with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he was a great man. Does it call him a tzaddik specifically? I don't believe so. I think tzaddik is only used by three different people. Yosef a tzaddik. I mean, Yamin a tzaddik, but I don't believe it quotes down Avraham Avinu as a tzaddik. However, there's something clearly is not black and white about this, and you can learn a huge lesson from this, that sometimes there are things that are written straight out in the Torah very, very specifically, and still they're not taken that way. In other words, even though the Parsha calls him a tzaddik, it's not necessarily so. You got to darshan that out. What do you mean he was a tzaddik? In comparison, or because of, or whatever? Well, what's the pshat behind that? And so too, you can say the exact opposite. If somebody's called a Rasha, obviously it's not just a Rasha. It means he's a Rasha because of blank. Because something had happened. There's some reason for it, and it could be that he's only a Rasha because of this. But if he was living some other time, then maybe he's not a Rasha, maybe he would have been a tzaddik. So let's try to understand this. The Alter of Navarduk. So where did I find this? 3 years ago, Likutei Pshatim. Somebody really has to start reading those Torah things, because sometimes you come out with good stuff. The Alter of Navarduk says, Navarduk. I see Navarduk, didn't I? Navarduk says the Machlokis is all about motivation. There are two different types of people that become tzaddikim. One is you're searching for the emes. If you're searching for the MS, then you automatically realize everything else is absolutely disgusting, and you down everything else, and you say, okay, I want to be a tzaddik. Because you're looking for the MS. You're searching around looking for the truth, and everything's all good. That's what you're looking for. Then everything else is absolutely nothing. Kol Shekain, if he was looking for the MS, he would have found the MS if Avraham Avinu was around. He would have found the MS among other tzaddikim. If there were other tzaddikim in the world, he would have been even greater. Because he would have seen everybody. He would have just grown and grown and grown and grown based on that. That's why he would have been a tzaddik if he was in others' generations. However, maybe he became a tzaddik because he was repulsed by the tumah that he saw in his generation. That's another thing that could happen. Not that you're mevakesh emes, but because you're disgusted by what those people are doing, automatically you turn to the truth. Now that doesn't mean that you're automatically a good person. That means you're only a good person if you see that there are bad people around. So if he was in a door of tzaddikim, lo yanechshav l'klum. because he never would have seen the disgusting stuff to become a tzaddik. He would have just been just like everybody else. He would have been a regular person just like everybody else. That's the difference. What was Noach? Was he a tzaddik, meaning because he was looking for the emes, he was mavakesh emes, or is he a tzaddik only because he was repulsed by the bad, repulsed by the tumah that they were all about? That's the machlokes between them. He gives an example over here. I tried to apply it to us, and I just couldn't do it. Sort of like this. It's like riding first class in a train. Certain people ride first class in a train at all times, meaning they'll always ride first class because they want to be with the people that are in first class. They don't want to be with the people that are in third class. But there are other people that only ride in first class when it's wartime. Because in wartime, then everything else is absolutely disgusting. All the people in the third class are absolutely disgusting. So you can't deal with them. So that's when you go to the business class. That's when you go to first class. But other times during the year, you're okay with first or with third class. You're okay with that. You're ready. You could deal with it. It's only because it's wartime, I can't deal with the third class right now. So he says, that's the pshat. Was Noah a first class passenger because he wanted to be first class? Or was he a first class passenger because he didn't want to be in third? What was Noah's problem? And that'll depend. That'll be the difference in Dorosev. I thought that was an unbelievable word. That also explains a little bit. Let's get a little bit more into Noach over here. Parak Zayin Pasuk Zayin. The Pasuk says, "V'yavo Noach v'banav v'ishto neshev v'alam itu ala teva mipnei me'amabel." They went into the teva because of the waters of the mabel. Rashi says an unbelievable thing. Mipnei me'amabel af Noach miktani emuna haya. Noach was one. He had tiny amounts of emuna. Didn't believe in God, right? Haya ma'amin. They know ma'amin. He believed, but he didn't believe. She'yavo amabel, that the mabel would come. He wouldn't go into the teva until the water forced him in. It's called Miktani Amuna. He talked to God. Not only once, not twice, three times. He talked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do you mean Kitani Amuna? How in the world can you be Kitani Amuna? How can you not believe? What does that mean, Kitani Amuna? The simple shot is, he didn't actually believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to destroy the world. Now that I somewhat believe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me you're going to destroy the world. And then he said, you know what? Let's wait another 7 days. Oh, no, first, you know what? I'm going to wait 120 years. Build a big boat. And get yourself ready. I'm going to give 120 years from now. See if you can do it. And then we'll see what happens after that. You give me 120 years to do this? What am I going to do? A brick a day? It's 120 years. You know, do you realize how many hours he probably put into this per day? Probably like he put in a minute a day. A minute a day. He like moved something like... Okay, that's today. The next day did a little further. Do you know how many... He had 120 years to do it. And then after the 120 years were over, he's like, all right, I'm ready. All right, we're going to do 7 days now. Since the Shalach has died, we're going to wait 7 days for the Avelis, and then we'll do it after that. Of course Noach didn't believe that the table was going to... That all of a sudden there was going to be a huge mabul. It seems quite obvious as to what Noach's taina was. Regardless, there's another word, the Berdichev. Rabbi Livius Berdichev says, he was Miktani Amuna Ba'atzmo. He didn't believe himself. He didn't actually believe that he would be able to be saved while everybody else was going to be killed. God, you mean to tell me that I'm the only person in the entire world that deserves to live? Can you honestly tell me that? Is that true? Can you really tell me that? That's what he was telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's saying, Noach was Miktani Amuna, and he refused to go in because he kept saying to himself, there's no way I'm going to be the guy who's the only person who's going to get in with my sons. There's no way that I'm going to be the person who's going to be able to propagate humanity. Is that the right word? A proper word? Okay, whatever. To be able to bring about everything later on. There's no way that he's going to be able to be that way. Okay, that's a nice prediction. I like that a lot. Who was he? This gets into what you were saying before, web man. People know Michael Jordan was born with webbed feet. He's a bit of a freak, right? He was born with webbed feet originally. He had surgery. He had little things that were wrong with him. I mean, obviously very, very wrong, but there's something wrong with him. So apparently, everything in this world has something that started beforehand. In other words, you can't just say that all of a sudden there's such a thing as Siamese twins. That's why they say, oh, Siamese twins. There was, Adam Rishon was really a Siamese twin within a keva in the beginning of creation. So too with Noah. Noah started something off for us. Pretty unbelievable. In Parakeh, Pasuk Chaf Hei, the Pasuk says, Chaf Ches, I'm sorry, says, Vayichi Lemech Shtaymu Shmonim Shana. He lived for 82 years, Umas Shana, 182 years, Vayolid Ben. He gave birth to a son. Now by everybody else, it says, Vayolid Es Lemech, Vayolid Es Misu Sholach, Vayolid Es Chanoch. By all the others, it says who they gave birth to. Over here, it says, Vayolid Es Ben. Vayolid Ben, I'm sorry. He gave birth to a son. And then the next Pasuk, Vayikwa Es Shemo Noach. He called his name Noach. Lemor saying, Zayinach Amenu, Mimaseinu Mietchen Yedenu, Minah Adom Asher HaShem.
generation?
I'm sorry? No, Lamech, the seventh generation is from Cain. This is a different Lamech. This is a different Lamech. This is the Lamech from the other side, from Shase's side. And either way, it's the ninth generation, the tenth generation. Still, what did he say? He said, we're going to call him Noah. Why? Because he consoled us from Memasenu, from our deeds, from the sadness of our hands, from the ground that God cursed. Says Rashi, he built a plow. Okay. That's nice. What does that all mean? And plus, if you would say Yenachameinu, Yenachameinu gives you what word? What word would you say? Menachem. Nachem. Right? You don't say Noah. What happened to the men? Why is he called Noah? That's not the name that I would have chosen for Noah if I was the person naming him. And plus, what happened? What's my Yolid Bain? So, it's a little bit... Shaykh right now, I actually didn't realize it was going to be Shaykh, but the time you hug him on page Shin Sadivav says there's a minug not to call a son by his first name until after the bris. There's a minug to not do it. And the reason why we don't do it is because the sultan has a control over the kid if you give him a name while he still is an orla. So meaning, if you give him that name while he still has that orla on him, the orla stands for the sultan and the nachash and everything, all the bad things out there. If you give him that name at that time, then he'll have a control over that kid because he'll have that name in his books out there. So even though you give him a bris later, once you give him that name beforehand, it's a big problem. So that's why we don't say the kid's name beforehand. So can you talk about it with your wife beforehand? Okay, whatever. I don't know those things. But regardless, that the Tamir Nagam does bring that down, that you shouldn't actually call a name. It's a big problem in America. I just realized this. You got to write the name on the piece of paper. You want to get the Social Security card right there in the hospital. You got to write his name down, but you don't want to name him until after the bris. People will know the name. What I don't know. I mean, that is giving it over to the sultan. I have absolutely no idea. But regardless, you're supposed to wait until after the meal. There's another thing.
Social Security.
Mechashvim can do the same thing. Magicians, if they're really, really good guys, they're really good magicians. I don't mean good people. If they're good magicians, if they have the guy's name, when the guy has an orla, they're able to do crazy amounts of kishuf on that guy and control him. I don't want to go into the whole thing right now, but lo yachbo rechaim berechev and parshas ki seitz is not talking about taking a grinding mill or anything. It's talking about using the person for your own whims. In other words, letting him be your puppet, basically. You being the puppeteer and using that guy as your puppet and him making him do whatever you want him to do. That type of idea is out there by naming, by what's it called? By a mechashev. If a mechashev gets a name when there's an orla. What Mesushelach told his son Lamech was, I see that this child is going to be an unbelievable child. I see the power that this child has, says Mesushelach. I know that this kid is going to be unbelievable. The mechashvim see that also. The magicians see that also. You got to make sure not to call him by a name. Because if they get his name, when he's still an Arul, it's a big problem. Now, even though Noah was born Mahul, he was born with the Bris Mila, he never got a Hatapa. He never got Hatapas Dam Bris. So because he never got Hatapas Dam Bris, he was still susceptible to those mechashvim. So if he was still susceptible to those mechashvim, said Lemech, said Mesushelach to Lemech, name him something different. Go tell everybody. Go tell everybody some different name. Now, we know him as Noah, and he was Noah. But what Lemech told people was that his name was Menachem. That was his name. Why? Everybody said, oh, really? And they looked at his stars and they said, let's curse Menachem, let's curse Menachem, let's curse Menachem. But it never worked because his name was never Menachem. It was really Noah. So that's why it says, by Yolid Bain, he gave birth to a son and he didn't name him right there. Then later on, he called him Noah, but he didn't call it out loud. He said, and that's the idea behind Menachem. That's the reason why he wanted to do it. And then got away the Ayin Hara and everything. Now, the Midrash Avkir takes it a step further, and this is what you were referring to before. The Midrash Avkir says that they went from penguins to human beings. Apparently, the human beings before Noah was born all had fingers that were all together like this. They had thumbs, opposable thumbs, digits, but their fingers were all together just like that. And they looked like little penguins, you know, who were able to walk because they had no need. They weren't supposed to do too much work, so they had no need to have separate opposable digits. That's why the Gemara in Ksuvis and Daf Hayom and Aleph says, why do we have fingers that are like pegs? I don't know. Why do we have toes that are like pegs? Why do we have anything? Like, why in the world are we talking about our fingers over anything else? The reason why is because originally we didn't. We didn't have fingers like pegs. Originally, we had hands like this. So the Gemara asks, so why do we have fingers like pegs? Says the Gemara, to stop us from hearing Lashon Hara. So we put our fingers in our ears. The Chassam Sofer says you can also put the earlobes inside there. Whatever, but you're supposed to put your fingers in your ears to stop yourself from hearing Lashon Hara. At the times of Adam Rishon, before the time times of the, before they had the Eitz HaDaas, there was no reason to put your fingers in your ears. You didn't have to, because nobody would speak Lashon Hara. But after Adam sinned, all of a sudden we need the fingers to be able to put them inside our ears. So when did that happen? By Noah. That's why Noah was able to come up with a plow. Can you imagine a penguin trying to plow? I tried. It's impossible. They can't do it. There's no way a penguin could go on a plow. It's just not going to work. But once Noah had these fingers, he was able to do it. He was able to show people what to do. And the reason why he came up with the plow, by the way, is because he knew that the land was cursed from Adam Rishon, but only the top three tefachim of ground. Only those top three tefachim were cursed. No other part of the ground was cursed. Only those top three tefachim. So what he did is he took a plow and he overturned those three tefachim. He took the ground from underneath it and put it on top, and that way the ground wouldn't be cursed anymore. He was the one who figured all that out, and thus we were able to plant the ground again. Yeah.
From where do you get the source? I mean, with all due respect, that only the first top three tefachim.
Oh, that's good. Miam Lois, the Chidah, and I have one other. I didn't write it down. Okay. But Miam Lois and the Chidah both bring it down. And I have a third one, but I can't say it right now, apparently. It could have been the Panach Raza, the Raza de Meir. The Panach Raza, by the way. Panach Raza has a gematria. And this is a crazy gematria. It says, Me ma'asenu, me itzvon yadenu, from our deeds and from the sadness of our hands. Is same gematria is 850. Same gematria is, Yadayim hayu beli chiluk etzbos. Their hands were without separated fingers. So ma'asenu, me itzvon yadenu, is yadayim beli chiluk etzbos. Okay, that works out really well. That gematria, I don't know who came up with that gematria, but somebody was trying really hard. So that was the Panach Raza. Okay. Did
what?
They had finger. Well, they had a finger. They had one big finger. Yeah,
like mittens.
Now, oh, well, we don't know about the nails. The nails doesn't say. I don't know if it was one big nail or whatever. Yeah, they had a mitten. They had a mitten. All right. Did he give them mussar? Did he give people mussar? See, he built a teva and was supposed to talk to them for the past 120 years. I would assume he gave them mussar. I mean, it's kind of hard to say not like that. The Be'er Basadik quotes Zohar straight out, and he argues on the Mizrahi and the Gurari and everything, and he says, "Vada." He gave Mussar for 300 years to the people of his generation. Seemingly not like what we said up above, that Noach was like this easygoing guy and everything. But he gave them for 300 years. But the Chassam Sofer says, Eile toldos Noach? Noach. You know what the toldos of Noach were? Now we know that there are such things as toldos as in children. But there's another type of child that you have. 300 years is the Be'er Basadeh from the Zohar. He quotes that down. So either way, but there's another type of toldos that you can have. Not children. What are the other type of toldos?
Talmidim.
Eile toldos Noach? Noah. You know the Talmidim of Noah were? Just himself. He had no other Talmidim. He was not the right guy. You don't want to say something about this to somebody that the Pasuk calls Tzadik, but he wasn't the right Rebbe. He wasn't the right Rebbe for the generation. What they needed was a guy to slap them around. They didn't need an Eish Rabbi. They needed somebody like Yitzchak Avinu, to be able to go up to them and say, you're dead wrong, to really fight them. Instead of having a guy who was debating them and like, okay, I hear you. You know, having somebody like that is just like, I guess you could be right. I don't think so, but that's not what they needed. They needed a guy to go up to them and say, you're dead wrong. Slap him in the face and say, stop it. They needed that. But Eile toldos Noach, he was Noach, he was easygoing. He's like, guys, I don't know. I think this is wrong. That they're like, whatever. And they went ahead and they spit on him. They said, you're a nobody. The only Talmidim that Noach had was Noach. That's the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says that exact same thing. So he might have mustered them up, but he was the wrong guy for the job. Some say he didn't give the muster at all. But yeah.
Well, then why did that work for Avram?
Why did it work for Avram Avinu is a good question. The Mabul is not the same as the door by Avram Avinu. And that's why some say, if he was in the times of Avram Avinu, he would have been just as great. Because he would have been like Avram Avinu. Some say no, it depends on the generation. If he would have been in other generations, he could have been much, much worse. Could have been much, much worse. It's a good question. Regardless, the only thing that he gained from it was his own midos. He made no Talmidim anything whatsoever, and that's why he needed a tikkun through Moshe. Noach came back in Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the whole thing of Nechoshes and Ato Tetzave. There's going to be a whole big thing of how Noah comes back in Moshe. Does anybody know Moshe's other name? I mean, I don't mean like Avigdor and Avisocho and Yered and Tov and Tovya. I don't mean those. There's another name mentioned in Tanakh. Yonason Ben Gershom Ben Menashe. The pshat is that Moshe also had a nun within him. It was taken out because he fixed up Noah almost immediately. The only thing that Moshe needed to do to fix up Noah was to become a Rebbe. And as soon as he became a Rebbe, all of a sudden Noah was fixed up. Because once he became a pure Rebbe and had Talmidim, then Noach said, I'm done. That's exactly what I needed. As soon as I have Talmidim, I'm back up. up in Shemayim, and Noach's neshama went back up to Shemayim. So he's never known as Menashe. He's only known as Moshe, except by Yonasan and Gershom and Menashe, who his grandson went off and started worshiping Avodah Zarah. Not that he wanted to, but that he was forced to, whatever. Regardless of the issue, he worshiped Avodah Zarah. At that time, we say he's Menashe. That brings us back to Noah, who wasn't able to muster people out in the right way. Yes. Moshe is Moshe, Shame, Shase, Noach, Hevel. Those are the five neshamas.
Whatever. So who did Shame learn from?
Oh, who did Shame learn from? Meaning from Noach.
He didn't learn from Noach.
Shame definitely did learn from Noach. But we're talking at this time. At this time, the only person to be able to learn from him was him himself. Vade, after the Mabul, they all had to learn from Noach. Noach was the new Adam Rishon. He was the new Rebbe. He was a new Rebbe.
Saying Shame would have learned from somebody else.
Yeah, he did. He did end up learning from him.
So why is
before
it different than before the mob? Why is it different?
Meaning because Shame was alive for 100 years before the Mabul?
No, why is it different before the Mabul that if he was the Rebbe after the Mabul, why did it still need to be fixed?
Oh, I mean, what? He still needed to fix up people that were from the Dora Mabul. I don't want to go into the whole thing now, but the Dora Mabul ended up becoming the sheep of Yaakov Avinu. Those sheep of Yaakov Avinu ended up being the tzon of Bnei Yisrael. There were 600,000 sheep, 600,000 people in the Mabul, 600,000 sheep that Yaakov Avinu had when he was a Roeh, and there were 600,000 Jews that left Mitzrayim, all of them with the same neshamas. So that's why you had to be Metak in the Dora Mabul, which was originally those. That's why they were thrown into the river, and they were thrown because that was the whole Mabul. They threw the kids into the river. That's why they had to work really hard. And when you work really hard, you stop yourself from having a taiva for your wife. And when you stop Shechva Zera Levatala, that was the whole sin of the original Dora Mabul. I have tons of stuff on this. It's not for now. Maybe by Parsha Shmos. Either way, that's the idea behind that. And because he didn't fix it up completely, he needed to go to jail. And that jail was the 12 months in the teva. Can you imagine being inside there? There's never been a bigger punishment. I know there's a movie that just came out. Evan Almighty, thank you very much. In which Evan apparently becomes a new Noah. I went inside the table. It seems to me, I never seen the movie, I'm not planning on it, but it seems to me that he had a very nice life in the table. The animals were helping him out, I think. Animals were helping him out. I saw like a little thing with like animals like using hammers and like helping him out. That's not what it was like. I mean, these animals were being fed 24 hours a day. He didn't sleep. His sleep was like, ugh. And the one time that he overslept a little bit for maybe like 3 minutes, the lion came and bit him. That's not good. You don't want to go around being afraid of a lion. Everybody was in close quarters. It was just absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But that brings us to our next thing. How in the world did they fit all these animals in the teva? Now, I am not an expert. It does quote down numbers in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer of how many animals actually went inside the teva and how many animals are in the world. It seems very, very small. He says there's 365 different types of chayos, or wild animals in the world. 365? That's ridiculous. The amount of species that there are in the world are give or take, within mammals, just mammals alone, we're talking well over the 20,000 range. Well over.
You did last year quote the Ron, I think.
Oh, we're gonna have 20,000 range. We still have, I mean, aside from that, there are shkatim, ramash, and bugs. There are well hundreds of thousands. You can't even go into the numbers with them. Birds, there's also tens of thousands. I don't know birds very well, so I have no idea. Fish, you don't even want to talk about. They find new fish. Yeah, they didn't go inside the table. But I mean, just the amount of species that there are, it's just a ridiculous amount. So what does the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer mean by these 365? And then he goes on and he says, how many shkatim ramashim there? What does that mean? What does this go on? Well, how do we understand all that? And granted, how do you fit all these things into the table? The amount of species that we have today, did you have a leopard? Just look at a lion. Do you know how many different species of lions there are? Let's go with elephants. Did he bring an Indian elephant, two Indian elephants, and two African elephants? Did he bring all the different types of rhinoceroses there are? There's an Indian rhinoceros, there's a Javan rhinoceros, there's black rhinos, white rhinos, and we're not even talking about the rhinos that are extinct already. The rhinos that are all extinct. There are unbelievable amounts of rhinos. No, forget about dinosaurs and everything like that. I mean rhinos that have lived within the past 200 years that are already extinct.
They all came from one.
So that's basically what it is. And that's what you were saying, Ken, with the Ron. So let's just go. The Ibn Ezra says that he made many tevas. That's one of the most unbelievable Ibn Ezras I've ever seen before in my life, that he made many different tevas. So the way I think it's worded in the Sefer, that in the Radal, Reb David Luria from he's a parish on the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the Radal says that was Bottomy Lebo. He made that up. So, there's no measures for that. There's nothing like that. Nobody says that. It's just an unbelievable thing to say. Like, yeah, you have 15 of them. What's it? Where? Like, where do you get did that from? Either way, but that would understand why it took him 120 years to make if he had like 700 Tevas, you know?
But the helicopter to get between and defeat them all.
And that would 100%. But no, he had specific measurements also. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give him specific measurements if it wasn't supposed to be that amount?
So that Hashem could do anything?
Yeah, but it's such a weird thing. Like, all right, I want it this and this and that. Just tell him, build a normal size Teva and I'll make it all fit.
Okay.
You don't have to tell him, it's got to be 50. No, 50, not 49. Like, what in the world is up with that?
They gave specific measurements for, and you know that there was no space inside of it.
Now, yeah, that's definitely true, and I agree with you. So the Ramban goes with your answer, and the Rabbeinu Bachai as well, and they say that it's a massive nace. That all you can say is that it was a huge miracle, and that unbelievable things happened, and they caused a massive miracle to happen.
There were also levels, weren't there? Like,
yeah, the third level and up there. It definitely, there was garbage for him and his family, and the food and everything, and then there's also for the animals itself. And 120 years is also a little weird. Why you have to make all this in 120 years? So look, how does this go? So the Drushas Aran, gives this answer. I came up with it, and I said it over at a Shalashidus at Yeshurun. Svi Garden heard it and showed me. He said, there's a Ran on it. I later on told the Ran over to Rabbi Shuman from Skok Yeshiva. He told me there's a Radal on it. On the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, there's a David Luria that speaks about it. That's their Rizal's cousin, nephew. I forgot who it is exactly, but it's related to that Rizal. He said he speaks about it as well. This is the answer. It's so simple. All animals came from one animal. I mean, it could very well be that there's a rhinoceros, and that rhinoceros came out. Some of them went to the Indian Peninsula. Some of them went over to Africa. Some of them went over to Saudi Arabia. Some of them went over to Bangladesh and all of those places, and they differed in how they are based on those places. Now, you could even say that about a regular cat. In other words, there could be a difference between a lion and a tiger and a leopard only based on where they started living and everything like that, and a cheetah and anything like that. They just decided, look, the cheetah wanted to be in the savannah and wanted to be really fast, so it started growing the muscles that it needed to be fast. Now, I am not promoting Darwinism or evolutionism or anything like that. All I'm saying is that it makes sense, even without all those theories of how the world or whatever, it makes sense that an animal does adapt to its surroundings. His raya, Rav David Luria brings the raya over here. You know what the raya is? Look at all the people in the world. All the people, we all come from Noah. We all come from Noah and originally from Adam Rishon. How do people become black? How do people become Chinese? How are there differences between, I know, but how do you know the differences between the Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, and everything? And if you go up to a Chinese person and say, oh, how are you? How is China? You go up to a Korean person, I'm sorry, and say that, they will kill you. They'll just kill you. And they know all these martial arts anyway. They're just ready, they'll go up to you and kill you because they say, like, how can you not tell the difference between them? And then you're like, oh, yeah, it's a difference. You can't tell the difference. The same way that certain people, you can't tell the difference between certain other people. You don't want to be, of course, I'm not being totally racist here. I'm just being, listen, this is just the truth of life. I don't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference between certain types of people. And I'm sorry, but there are definite differences between Indians, Hispanics, blacks, whites, even Jews, different types of white people, whether the Aryans and everybody else. There's differences between everybody. How did we all come out? Because we adapted to certain surroundings. Obviously, there are genes involved. You got to understand where those genes come from. But we adapted. It's adaptation. And there's a Gemara on it in Shabbos and Daf Lamed, where this guy goes up to Hillel and he says, I'm going to make Hillel angry. I'm going to make Hillel all angry. And he goes up to Hillel and he says, why do the Babylonians have round heads? Why do these other people, Tartonians, I forgot what it is, have round eyes? Why do these Africans have large feet, large flat feet? And Hillel explains, because they live on swamplands, because these guys, they live in sand and they got to have these certain types of eyes. He talks about them and he says exactly why these people grew the way they did. It means that people adapt to their surroundings. It's a very, very simple shot. So it could be the exact same way with the animals, that they all went down that way. Now,
the Ron says it here. Why is it such a ridiculous idea for Bereshit?
In other words, say what? For Darwinism to be able to fit it in?
Yeah.
Let's not go into it right now. I will give you Rav Chaim Dov Keller's article that he wrote about how it doesn't make any sense to even try to help Darwinism to be fit into the Parsha, because Darwinism has never been proved. Why bother fitting in something that has never been proved? Why bother? You could. It's nice. But why bother? Rabbi, well, obviously there are different people that hold different things than that. But I personally don't think that Darwinism is anything to even sneeze at. I haven't seen enough stuff on it, and the stuff that I've read is just so contradictory and ridiculous. It seems to me to be one of the worst theories I've ever heard before in my life. So, but I'm not going to go into anything like that. Now, either way, that's what it means, that only the Ikarim went into the Teva. Now, Hashem gave them four warnings according to the Me'amloi. Unbelievable stuff right before the Mabul happened. Four warnings to the people, saying to them, basically, do what I say, or else you see what's coming. The first warning was, the Tzura no longer look like people. Now, here we go with Darwinism again. What does that mean? Says me Amloy, they started to look like monkeys. Now, that is, they started to look like monkeys. The people. The people started, the Tzura, their faces started to look like monkeys. They started to look, instead of regular people, they started to look monkeyish. And all of us have a little bit of monkey in us. I go to these, you see like certain types of things, like sakis. There's a type of monkey that's called a saki. Just looks like a guy who gets really angry and holds his breath. Like, you know, it turns all red. That's what it looks like. It's got a red face and it just looks like a human being. It just looks like a regular guy, you know? We turn like monkeys. What was the original person like? Probably a very, very beautiful person. Nothing similar to what we have today, but much, much more beautiful, that had a face that was different from what we are, which are, look like monkeys. Somebody told me this once, and I don't remember, I think it was Rav Chassid in Beis Yisrael. I think it was him in the middle of a shir. Every person looks like a certain type of animal. You all correspond to a certain type of animal, and everybody looks like a certain animal. That's why some people look like their dogs. They have that look. You ever look at a certain dog and you'd be like, wow, you guys must be twins. And it's obviously an owner and a dog, and you don't want to say it out loud. But some people aren't, you know, some people are very happy about that.
I was told I reminded
someone
of a bat.
What?
I was told I reminded somebody of a bat.
That's because you think you're Batman. That had nothing to do with the fact, you know, that you look or not look, you know. You don't have wings. It's nothing like that. Yeah.
You could be a stick bug.
I could be a stick bug? No, there's a lot more to me. I have my own theories on myself. Somebody once told me, I saw a guy that looked exactly like a vulture. He stood over like this. He had like a hunched back a little bit, and he like looked like that, and he like just like ready to peck. I was just like, oh, it's a vulture. It's a vulture. I could even tell you it's a griffin vulture. Regardless of all this stuff. So that's number one, that we started to look like that. I'm not going to go into the Melech HaShlomo. Just, you know, the whole thing about the monkey and the elephant. You guys remember the monkey and the elephant? Okay, we got. The Melech HaShlomo. There is a good one, but the Melech HaShlomo in Kilayim Parakas Mishnah Hay says. So Melech HaShlomo is a parish on the Mishnayos. He says that the Mishnah says Kof the Pil Min Chayahim, that a monkey and an elephant are types of wild animals. So Melech HaShlomo asks, what do you thought? They're not exactly domesticated. You know, they are. I guess you can see them as pets a little bit, but they're not exactly domestic. You think, of course, they're Chayas, right? Says the most unbelievable thing. He said he heard from a Makobel, right? Reb Meshulam, he calls him. Reb Meshulam the Makobel, that after Dora Migdal, after the Migdal was, you know, destroyed, certain people fell down and became monkeys and elephants. Monkeys because they look like people, and elephants because they understand human language. So I have gone up to many an elephant, and I have tried talking to them in English and in Hebrew. It's never worked. But people have told me it's because I'm talking to Indian elephants, and Indian elephants probably speak Indian. I have seen reports of people being able to, that elephants are able to spell out words. I've been able to see, like, elephants are, and they're obviously extremely intelligent, but there are a lot of similarities. Elephants live to an average age of 70. They become adults at the age of 20. They have a very, very good memory, unlike any other animal in the world. They are very into friendship and groups and things like that. They are very, they'll remember people from all around. I'm sorry? They fear they're dead. Right, you'll never see an elephant graveyard. They bury sometimes. Their dead gets buried automatically. There's like, there's tremendous things about elephants that you think about it, you're just like, that's a little strange. They have Jewish noses, just a little bit longer. It gets really, really close. And they have a little bit big teeth. It just gets a little bit bigger than most. But either way, there's a lot of stuff behind that. That's number one. Number two, Ruchos and Mashchisim and Shadim were given permission to be sholeit everywhere. Meaning, these Shadim were allowed to just do whatever they wanted. They're allowed to walk around the world and just be like, start slapping people in the face and do whatever they wanted as they went throughout the entire world. That was only given permission right before the Mabul. Is Machlokas where the Shadim come from? If it comes from Lilith and Adam Rishon, comes from Ad Chava with the Shadim during those 130 years. Shechva Zerah Levatol from the Dora Mabul formed them. Nama was together with a bunch of giants. It could have been that Cain's kids were all considered Shadim. It could be that Shemchazi and Azol were the fathers of all the demons. Lots of different questions on how the Shadim exactly existed. Those were six right there. What? Could have been all of them all together also. Right, 100%.
They just had like power to do whatever they wanted?
They were allowed to do whatever they wanted. I mean, Shadim are not exactly Malachim, not exactly people. They're sort of in between. So they were allowed to fly around and destroy them. Yes, they had the power to be able to show themselves to people, form different forms, and be able to show people what they wanted them to see, and be able to scare people and freak people out and whatever. Stuff that I don't think Elliot really wants right now. You know, know, stuff that you really sort of sit back and realize and say, like, yeah, I thank God that we don't have the demons walking around us and doing anything to us right now.
How do you know that?
We don't. I mean, we simply don't. Two were allowed on the table. No Shaitim made it through the Mabul except for two. We don't know who those two Shaitim were. It is mentioned by Rashi in this week's Parsha. However, two of them definitely did make it on the table. It seems that one of them was Shemchazai. We don't know exactly if it was him or not, but it does seem like one of them was Shemchazai. There's a lot to that. We got to talk about that, but that's not for now. Again, he was the father of Sichon and Og. How is Sichon born? Good question. We'll get to that later. Now, three, dead bodies rotted. Now, the big thing behind that is that they no longer keep the dead bodies on top of the ground. They used to use them as shrines. Put them on top, and they used to keep them in their houses or whatever. And that led to, or promulgated, all the Avodah Zarah that they had around them. There was a lot of stuff that, I guess, these dead bodies put, but now all of a sudden they started rotting. Number four, and my favorite, the mountains started to form. There was no such thing as a mountain. Because if you think about it, a mountain is the most ridiculous waste of space that God has in this world. The most ridiculous waste of space. What's in the middle of a mountain? It takes up a ton of space. And there's not enough there. You're right, there's like little trees and whatever as it goes up there. And you're right, there's like extra little trees. But there's not that much life on a mountain, and you could have that life on a regular hill. There's no reason for the mountain to be that high. What in the world is the point of a mountain? What's the point of it? It's a very hard thing to understand. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make mountains, aside from skiing, if it's in certain places? Which obviously cannot be the reason behind all mountains, because not everybody skis down. Or for a guy to jump up, you know, all the way up to certain mountains. But there's got to be something to it. Says the Mian Loes, they formed, once the Mabul was about to form, these massive mountains just popped up and took away the most cultivated fields and the best fields out there and became these massive, massive mountains. However, it's very obvious, though, that it must be that if that's so, that means inside one of these mountains must be large areas in which there is, you know, fertile land, fertile ground, which if we could get rid of the mountain, we'd be able to get to the ground underneath it. I don't want to say anything about it right now, but Mistama, that is one of the entrances to Gan Eden. That one of the entrances to Gan Eden was hidden by a mountain. It was just taken on top from the mountain. It's just whatever. That's that. Mount Everest is another thing altogether. My last thing. Miyad
but if all this was happening, how could Noah... Oh, he didn't doubt the water.
Right. Miyad Kochaya Edroshenu. Miyad Kochaya Edroshenu is mentioned later on in the Parsha. After they all come out, it says that if any animal tries to destroy a person, Miyad Kochaya Edroshenu, I'll try to destroy that... it's in Pasuk Hey, Perek... Where is it? Perek Tes Pasuk Hey. I'm going to destroy any animal. So there's an unbelievable thing over here. The Ramban says, I don't understand. I'm going to kill the... If an animal kills you, basically, the Pasuk says, I'm going to kill them. But animals have no schar and onesh. If they have no reward and punishment, then what does that mean? If they kill you, I'm going to kill them. Okay, what does that mean? So basically, the Ramban says, it's a gzeres hakasuv, he says, it must be a gzeres hakasuv, that if an animal kills you, even though it seems weird, even though he wasn't supposed to, if he ends up killing you accidentally, I'll kill that animal. Or I'll make sure that animal gets killed. But what does that mean? How does an animal have free will? Does an animal have a choice to be able to do what it wants? Does he have free will? Does he have that choice or not? So the Ramban seems to say no. He doesn't have the choice, really. It's just he might have done it by accident. The Rambam in Mori Nevuchim says, nowhere in Chazal does it say that animals have schar v'onesh. There is no doggy heaven. There's no doggy heaven, and apparently there's no doggy hell either. But there's nothing like that. However, there are some geonim that say there is. Where does he get that from? Where do you get that geonim from? So he quotes it down. He says like this. He says, that Rambam, by the way, Mori Nevuchim is Chelek Gimel Perek Yud Zayin. He says, there are two places that I have. Where are those guys? Here we go. No, I have it down here, I think. Shuvas HaGaonim. Shuvas HaGaonim brings it from Belmetzia Pehe Yom Aleph. There's a Gemara with Rebbe. Rebbe was sitting there, and all of a sudden a calf ran over to him and said, please save me from the Shechita. And he said, go, L'kach no tzarta. This is what you were created for. And Rashi says, and you get schar for this. You get schar for getting shechted. Whoa. So what does that mean? Is there an ego heaven? Is there a little heaven where like calves are grazing and cloud eight? Is that like up there? It's just not exactly there, you know, and these calves are grazing? What does that mean exactly? And then there's another one, Rav Sadia Gaon. Everybody knows Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon says, schar v'onish is by all brios, including chayos, behemos, and shedim. That they all of Skarba Onish, and they have the choice to go into Gan Eden or to go to Gehenna. That's an unbelievable thing also. Where do they get that from? It goes on a little bit. There's a Midrash Tanhuma in Perek Yud Aleph that says a mouse that's Shomer Mishpachto that stays in its family and doesn't go to any other animal that did so during the Mabul, he did it Kidei Litol Schar, to get reward to be able to live and got onto the Teva. That's how with the mouse. But they don't get Schar Onish. They don't have these choices. Where do they get that from? Go on, the Abarbanel says something very similar. There's a Redak in Melachim, in Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Chaf Chas, that says it's a machlokus, a riding donkey, for letting a human riding on top of it get schar in Olam Haba. Wow. And it's just absolutely crazy. And there's a Bereshis Rabbah in Perek Chaf Chas and Perek Chaf Beis, Sif Yud Ches, that says that Ophos, because the birds covered the blood of Rivka Yemin when she fell off the camel and she saw Yitzchak, their schar is to have Kisui Adam. That means they get schar. And so too, animals, whenever an animal does something for a human being, Bereshis Rabbah says, they get rewarded for it. That means they get reward. So what does that mean exactly? It somewhat means like this. Do Malachim have Schar Va'onesh? Angels in the sky? They don't. That also might be off. Michal and Gavriel, when they went to Machlokes, it was Michal or Rafal, when they went to Sodom, in order to destroy Sodom, they said a line over there, Mashchisi Manachnu, we are destroying the city. They didn't say, Mashchis Hashem Esoir. They said, Mashchisim Anachnu, we are going to destroy the city. Because they said that, Yonasim Ben Uziel says they were punished, and they were not allowed to go back to Shemayim for 130 years until Yaakov Avinu had his dream, and in that dream where he saw the ladder going up to Shemayim, the Malachim going up to Shemayim, were Michal and Gavriel, who were finally going back up to Shemayim after staying down on earth because they were punished for saying Mashchisa Manachna. Shemchazayin Azoil, were two Malachim who were up there in the sky, said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma'anush Kisis Kurenu, why do you bother having human beings? They're nobody. Says Hashem, if you would go down there, you would sin. It's the land that makes them sin. It's the physicality that makes them sin. They said, try us. We'll go ahead and try it. They went down there and they immediately sinned. They immediately sinned. They went off on Avodah Zarah, Gilei Rais, etc. They went off on everything. Gilei Rais is Mefurish. Avodah Zarah is not Mefurish. Shemchazayin, yeah, it's not Mefurish about Avodah Zarah. But Gilei Rais 100%. Now, I don't understand that. They're malachim. What do you mean they can sin? How are they sinning? Apparently, anything that is put in a physical form on earth has the ability to sin. You're right that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has, I guess you could say, a tachlis for every person. The tachlis for a person, a plant is a good call also. The tachlis for a person is a very, very high tachlis, and that's why we need a higher neshama. Higher neshamas and ruchos and everything like that. But an animal doesn't need all that. It's a nefesh bahamis. And that nefesh just is, you have this to do. Now, there are times where the animal has choices to make, and it is allowed to make those choices, as long as it fulfills its original tachlis, and it knows what its tachlis is. That's the difference between an animal and a human being. That an animal does know its nefesh is connected enough that they know what it is, but the animal has to make those decisions as he's going around in the world, and as he does it, he can live his life. And the animal is given schar for anything he does well, and onish for anything he does bad. Shadim are the exact same way. There are shadim that decide to do well, and there are shadim that decide to do bad. And if they do well, they get rewarded. If they do bad, then they get punished. 1 minute. Just 1 minute. So that's the idea behind it. So yes, 100%. There are certain things out there in which they get schar v'onish. The Rambam and the Ramban seem to say not at all. But the Gaonim and some Midrashim seem to say yes, there is. There are certain things like that. I don't know how the Rambam missed these schar v'onish things. Especially these, the Pasuk seems to say that they're going to be punished immediately. That if an animal eats a human being, they will be destroyed. Hashem will destroy them. So it seems straight out that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish an animal for going ahead and eating a human being. So there seems to be stuff out there. Alright, there's something like that. There's stuff like that. Next time, I did not go into the Orev. The Raven. Raven we'll have to go into next year. I have crazy stuff on the Raven. And the final thing is the Kerem. Anybody know what Noach did when he got out of the Teva? Made a vineyard. Planted grapes, got drunk on the wine. Well, that's the first thing I would do. What was he thinking? And he sacrificed, apparently, he went ahead and sacrificed a sheep, pig, monkey, and lion. Yep, that's what I would have sacrificed. What in the world happened over there? That's for next time. Same bat time, same bat channel, guys. We'll see you later. Have a good Shabbos.